Hello, friends, and welcome to the Healing Ground Movement. Now, for more content and bonus features, you can join us on Facebook and Instagram. And remember, all of our content is delivered freely, so please consider supporting the show by donating via the link on our website at healinggroundmovement.com or liking and reviewing the podcast on your favorite platform.
Enjoy today's episode.
Hey, everyone. Today's episode is brought to you by ButcherBox. ButcherBox partners with people who are dedicated to doing the right thing, never cutting corners and always looking for ways to improve. Discover why they're the trusted source of high-quality protein for families across the country. At ButcherBox, they believe in better. For them, that means caring about their animals and the planet, treating our planet with respect. It means improving the lives of animals and the livelihoods of farmers, and ultimately, it means better meals enjoyed together. The protein from ButcherBox is never given antibiotics or added hormones. It's humanely raised. Our family loves the convenience and quality, and knowing that we are getting humanely raised and sustainably harvested protein. You can customize your box with the right amount of food and variety of meat to fit your family's individual needs. If you're interested in getting a special offer, go ahead and head to healinggroundmovement.com/resources to follow the link for ButcherBox. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Healing Ground Movement Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Carly Hudson, and we have an incredible guest with an incredible story joining us today. Paul Fortune is joining us, and he is here to share his story. He was born with cerebral palsy, and it was so severe that the doctors told his mom that he would never be able to walk. Thank goodness for a wonderful mom and a great mindset that this wasn't his story. He was able to overcome it and is now able to live a very active life. It wasn't easy, however, to get to that point. Today, as a mindset coach, Paul shares his story with his clients to help them rewrite their own stories to go after their true dreams and desires. And I can certainly attest, and I think we've heard this a lot, some of the hardest won lessons come from adversity. And you know, we miss the opportunity to see that in our own lives. And I appreciate you, Paul, joining us and kind of turning these stories on their head a little bit with your own experience. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Carly. I've been excited to talk with you today.
Well, you know, since this is the nutshell version, your little bio version, give us a little bit of your story, your life, what brought you to coaching in the way you do today?
Absolutely. As alluded to in my bio, I was born with something called cerebral palsy. And if your viewers don't know what cerebral palsy is, it's lack of oxygen to the brain at labor. And as a result of this lack of oxygen to the brain at labor, it can leave one side of the body paralyzed. It can affect your speech. And this is all permanent. This does not go away. You have this for life. So when I was born, I wasn't moving the right side of my body very much. And naturally, my mother was concerned about that. So she got a testing done to see what was going on. And it came back that I indeed suffered from cerebral palsy. And the first doctor thought it was so severe that they thought I would never be able to walk. And it would be a good idea when I got to a certain age to get me ready to be in a wheelchair, because that was going to be my life going forward. I had conversations about my mother about this. And she said that night, she bawled herself to sleep thinking about what my son's life was going to be, how hard it was going to be with the journey ahead of me. And the next day when she saw me to get me ready for the day, I looked up at her and if to tell her, don't let this be my story. And that mother bear started roaring inside of her and she was on a mission. She didn't believe it, it was more than belief. She knew what was going to happen. She was going to do everything she could to make sure that I walked. So she got a second opinion, a third opinion, a fourth opinion, a fifth opinion, found a physician that was willing to help. And with this physician's help and me doing physical therapy 5 to 6 times a week and my mom's unwilling, dire need for me to walk, I was able to walk at age 3. Now, I don't really remember that, but obviously that was a huge feat in my life. I was able to walk when other doctors said that wasn't going to happen.
Oh, and the mother bear roaring, you brought chills and tears. And I mean, what a powerful way to even just start this conversation. But I do think that so much credit needs to be put there, that advocacy with the mother, if you're too young to advocate for yourself, That makes all the difference in our healthcare outcomes right there. That it's so undervalued that that's the moment where it begins, that roar in the heart of your loved ones or yourself.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, she was, like you said, she was my voice. I did not have a voice at the time, and she was my voice. Mm-hmm. And she was not going to allow me to not succeed. And that's what happened. So now I'm putting the soccer about 5 or 6. I do remember this. And at the time, I could probably run about 25 to 50 yards where I'd have to stop. My leg would give out. So I'm basically standing there where these other kids are playing soccer around me. And I remember going to my mom saying, "This is ridiculous. I don't want to play soccer anymore. I'm just standing there. I'm making a fool out of myself. I don't want to do this anymore." And I remember what my mom said to me because it was pivotal. And I still think about it today. She said, "Paul, if you don't want to play soccer anymore, that's fine, but you need to honor your commitments. So you need to finish out that soccer season. And if you don't want to play soccer after that, that's perfectly fine." And that's what happened. I'm 41 years old. I haven't played soccer since I finished out that soccer season. So that was a lesson learned.
Right. I had a similar soccer showdown as well. It's just, you know, it's not for everybody, but you That's do. Right. You have to make it through the season and know to really know it's not for you.
You're right. Yeah. I did get a big break right after that soccer season. I got surgery on my right foot to tighten up the tendon and to give me a little bit more spring in my step. And I did not know how big of a game changer this was going to be for me until I went to school. I went to a new school at the time, and I remember my first day of physical education, PE. We did our stretches, and the teacher says, "Okay, guys, run a lap." And I'm thinking to myself, here we go again. I'm going to run 25 to 50 yards, and I'm going to have to stop. These kids are going to see that, and they're going to start to tease me because that's all I can do. But because of the surgery, it was different. I was able to go past that point where I normally have to stop. I remember saying to myself, "Come on, Paul, you got this, buddy. Come on. And I finished the lap with the other kids. On the outside, I kept it cool. But on the inside, I was like, yes. The first time in my life where I just fit in, I didn't stand out. I was just part of the crew, part of the kids. And because of the surgery, like I said, things got easier for me, but I would not consider them easy. I switched schools again. My parents got divorced and I had to switch schools again. I moved with my mom. And I switched schools in middle school, so 12 or 13 years old. And that's a tough, tough age. Kids are becoming teenagers, hormonal changes. And these kids have been going to school with each other for many, many years. They've already had their cliques. So it's hard to just break in just being a new kid alone. But I'm a new kid holding my right arm a little bit differently, walking with a limp. So I stood out. New kid with a limp. Stood out. I could not break into the school. I mean, I tried whatever I could to make friendships. I couldn't do it. I was bullied, teased, spit on. It was a tough, tough, tough time in my life. And I don't know what it is, but I was raised in a time where you didn't tattle, where, you know, you weren't a snitch. Mm-hmm. So I would bottle this up. I wouldn't tell my mom. I wouldn't tell anybody. I would just bottle it up. I'm good, fine. I didn't want to get anybody in trouble. I just wanted to, that's how I was at the time. So I was internalizing a lot. I was carrying a lot of anger and pain inside of me. And while this was going on, my mom raised me Catholic. So she wanted me to go to a Catholic high school. So I had to take an assessment test to see where they were going to place me when I got to high school. Well, when I met with the principal and my mom, the principal tells the both of us that we're going to put Paul at the lowest level possible, and I don't expect much from him. He doesn't look like college material. After one test, I bombed the test, and that was what the principal tells us. So now I think I'm stupid, plus I don't have any friends. I'm bullied and teased in school. And I remember crying myself to sleep most nights going, why me? Why do I have to go through this? Why can't I just fit in with the other kids? And I don't know what came over me, but midway through my 8th grade, I was tired of feeling angry and sad all the time because I knew deep down they were not my go-to emotions, but because of the environment I was in, they were becoming my go-to emotions. And I wanted to change that. So I thought to myself, what could I do to distract me from these feelings, this noise? I could just focus in on something. And it kind of ignored all the other negative stuff that was going around me. And at the time, I loved baseball. So I thought, what if I tried to make my varsity baseball team in high school? So I started playing fall ball, winter ball, spring ball. And if I wasn't doing that, I was throwing a tennis ball against the wall. And the great thing about this is there was coaches that were noticing me that I was always playing baseball. I was always signing up. I was always doing that. And they took a liking to me because I was giving it a hard go. And they said, Paul, what do you want to do? You're playing baseball all this time. What's your goals? And I was afraid to tell them it. But they finally got it out of me that I wanted to make my varsity baseball team. And I thought, oh, crap, they're going to laugh at me for saying that. They're saying it's impossible. And I never forget, the coach goes, that's doable. I'm like, what? That's doable? Yes, that's doable. And he said, you got to put it out there, though. You got to tell other people that that's your goal, too, so they keep you accountable. So I said, okay. And they go, and he goes, what do you mean by that? And he goes, after practice tomorrow, you're going to go in front of the team and tell them your goal. And I'm like, no. I don't want to do that. They're going to laugh at me. And they go, you got to do it. So after practice, I was real nervous. I was shaking. And I told the team that's what I wanted to do. And I thought, well, they're going to just start laughing, teasing me. But instead, they started clapping. And I got real emotional. I started to cry. And I was like, this is crazy. And they clapped for me. And the beautiful thing about this goal now, I know this now, I didn't know this at the time, I started changing the energy about myself. I had my shoulders back, my head up, sending out a different energy. And as a result of this new energy, kids started sending a different energy back towards me. Instead of bullying and teasing me, they started rooting for me. So my high school career was much different than my junior high or middle school, wherever you want to call it, all because of my energy shift. And I'm happy to tell you, I was able to make my varsity baseball team as a junior and a senior. In my senior year, I pitched a 3-hit shutout. They poured the Gatorade on me and I felt so alive. I felt so good about myself. And I graduate high school and I really start to think about what that principal said to me earlier about not being college material. And I thought about the goal that I just made for myself about making my varsity baseball team. Because when I made that goal in middle school, I thought it was a near impossible goal. I thought it was just a way to distract myself, but I was able to make the goal. Somebody with cerebral palsy was able to make a varsity baseball team. So I thought, why not say that I was college material? Because I had a limited belief about myself saying that I wasn't college material all through high school. So I just did enough to stay eligible to play baseball because I was thinking, what's the point of doing anything further than that? I'm not college material, so why waste my time, do other activities? So that's how that was my mindset all through high school. But I thought, well, why can't I change that narrative? I just made my baseball goal. Why can't I set another goal saying I am college material? So I enrolled into a junior college because that was the only place that would accept me at the time. And I got myself a math tutor. I went to the math lab. I got another tutor. And I did this constantly. I did everything necessary that I had to do to increase my grade point average. And as a result of my hard work, I was able to take my barely a 2.0 all the way to 3.5, where I was able to transfer to a 4-year university where I did graduate. And I so wanted to go back to that principal and say, see, you were wrong. I was college material.
Well, it just speaks so much to what the power of mindset. You've already, through this first, 20 some odd years of your life, done such a roller coaster of change, where what you are changing, what you have available to manipulate within your body and your experience is your mindset, is your determination. Because going right back to where you started is, you talk about cerebral palsy having no cure. But you still find it, and it doesn't. I mean, we have a certain level of brain damage that it is hard to come back from, that causes that paralysis, that causes that lack of movement. But there was so much improvement from never going to be able to walk to making your varsity baseball team, that working within somewhat of a confine, your mindset changed your whole life experience. There was no giving up underneath the decree of what these doctors and this principal said to you. What an incredible life lesson to have so young.
Yeah, you know what? And then looking at it at the time, I was pretty much just living in the present. I really, really didn't think about all that. But yeah, now looking back in my life, I go, wow, I did have a great mindset. I didn't really think about it, especially early on when I was in middle school, because I really did have low self-esteem in myself. But I think it was just a great, great mom and great coaches that saw something in me. Mm-hmm. Really, well, I was able to take it to the next level, and I think it goes to the point where you don't do it alone.
Yeah,
it's okay to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a weakness asking for help. And I think that was what helped me catapult me to the next level, was saying, you know what, I need help on getting this goal or doing this or doing that, and going to the college. I needed help there too. I need tutors. I need everything, because school doesn't come easy for me. I really have to, you know, I remember going to school, you know, and taking classes, and I would have friends who would not go to any class.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just take the test and they would ace it. And I, you know, I wouldn't see them in another class until the next test. And I would get so jealous at them. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to do that, but not me. Mm-hmm. I had to listen to every single lecture. I had to get a tutor. I had to get I had to do all that stuff to even get to that level. And it's just, yeah, you know, that's just the way it is for me. And yeah, I have to accept that.
Yeah. We all have these places, and I like what you say about asking for help though, and kind of like knowing where you're at, knowing what it is for you. You know, these people that just show up exam to exam without attending class in between, you know, I'm sure they have their own places of needing to ask for help, but we are all in a position of needing it, of finding that first person that says, that's doable, I believe in you. And I kind of want to circle back a little bit, because there's a misconception, and I hear this in questions about my own story of injury as well, about, you know, such a great outlook, and you're so determined, and that mindset. And we kind of, you know, depending on the conversation, get to skip this part about the anger and the pain and the feeling like an outsider and the crying ourselves to sleep saying, why me? You know, that somehow we have this saint-like level where, you know, you wake up being terribly different from all of your peers going, nah, it's cool. I'm going to be a really awesome adult because of this. It's going to be fine. There is a transformation in that muck and being in there and finding that person to say that can work and pulling yourself up. Do you mind, you know, touching that a little bit more? Because I'm sure that is a big part of the coaching that you do with your clients now.
Well, yeah. I mean, first off, you got to give yourself grace. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we beat ourselves up a lot when we're not like 100, or we are sad, or we are angry. And we got to realize we're human beings with emotions. So it's okay to feel angry. It's okay to feel sad. But in a certain point in your life, you're going to say to yourself, I'm tired of feeling angry. I'm tired of feeling sad. And that's when you're ready for the change. And the easiest way to start with that, for me anyway, and I know it, like I did it back then, but I know exactly what I did now, is I started to look out for the positive things in my life. Mm-hmm. And I focused in on that. And once I started focusing on that, my mind started spreading to looking for all the positive things that could happen. When mm-hmm. I will go negative, the opposite happens, right? Negative things start to pop up in my life, where if I'm driving to work and I get a flat tire, just my luck, this would happen to me. You know, it's just what your mind is seeking is what's going to happen to you. I use this example all the time. When you buy a new car, and all of a sudden you're driving that car around, you see that same car that you just bought all over the place. You didn't see it before, but now you bought this car, you see it because your mind's seeking it. It's the same thing with the positive and negative mindset.
Yeah, and you're speaking to a really delicate tightrope that I think so much of us are trying to learn in whatever our struggles are in life, which is not to bypass that real human aspect of feeling the grief, feeling the anger, feeling those less than desirable emotions, while also not letting that be the only thing you see. You know, not letting that be the entire future landscape of your life, because if that's all you focus on, that will be the entire future landscape of your life. That point of, I can be more than this, and expanding that palette of emotions to include such incredible success and support and community the way you did for the second half of your childhood.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, absolutely. It's being able to be vulnerable. I think is a big thing too, is owning your vulnerability. Vulnerability is a strength, not a weakness.
Oh, talk us a little bit more about that piece.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let's fast forward a little bit about coaching. Mm-hmm. Okay. So when I got into coaching, and I can dive into how I got into it and all that stuff, but let me just dive into this part of it. When I first got into coaching, I was not getting any clients whatsoever. No, nobody. And I thought, well, I'm going to have to reevaluate this. I don't know if this is going to work for me. Then I started to get a realization. And the realization was, how do I expect people to be to open up to me if I don't open up to them? Like, I'm just some dude asking them to open up. Well, why should I open up to you? I have no idea who you are. What makes you such the guru? Mm-hmm. And I started to really think about my own story about cerebral palsy, because the story I just told you, I wanted to bury that story. I didn't want to tell anybody that story, because all through growing up, all I wanted to do was fit in. I didn't want to stand out. I didn't want any special treatment. I just wanted to be like every other kid. So just bringing up that I had cerebral palsy, I'd be near in tears. If somebody saw me limping, I'd make up some silly excuse why I limped. I did not want to go there, but I thought the only way that I'm going to get any traction into coaching is mm-hmm. if I own my story. So it started off real shaky. I opened up and I did more and more and more and more. Because at first when I did, I was very emotional about it, but I've talked about it so much now. It's just part of my story, part of how I go. And I really don't have any emotion to it because it's part of my life and I've embraced it. And now that I've embraced it, doors opened up for me. People, I remember my first client ever coming to me and saying, Paul, I don't have cerebral palsy, but I have X, Y, and Z, and I think you can help me. And it just opened up from there. And that's why what I mean by vulnerability is a strength, not a weakness. None of that would open up for me if I didn't own my own story.
I love that. And it's so true. And I think there is, you know, coming from a little bit of that childhood of, you know, you just top it up, get through, you know, just keep on pushing. There is not an expectation that the nuance of what makes our life difficult, the struggle of being human in this world has any place in being human in this world. You should bury your humanity, bury your struggles. But that's where we create shame around these stories, you know, holding that shame around cerebral palsy, where it limits you instead of creating connection. Because isn't that, in essence, what we're all looking for is to seek to be understood. And it does, like your first client, it doesn't have to be another person with cerebral palsy. It can be someone with say, you know, I see you struggled like I struggled. Can you help me? And I remember our first conversation. I heard my own childhood echoing in your story, and we have very different health histories. But what connects us together and makes us unique yet powerful in the same? It's such an interesting web that it creates.
Yeah, empathy. It creates empathy.
So you work a lot in coaching with helping us find these unique talents and helping us sort of recreate that story. What does that look like for you in your client work?
Well, you know what? I've kind of reinvented myself a little bit. And I just think that I want to be that injection of hope with my clients, that there's more to your story than what you're seeing right now. I want to open up that picture. I'll never forget this. A client said to me, and I think this is what helped me reinvent a little bit, was, Paul, I can't wait for our calls. Because after our calls, I feel so good about myself. I feel like I could take on the world. So for me, in my coaching, it's more about showing people what could be. I had a client, this was a couple of years back, and she was going into her story, and it was very, very negative. You know, she was telling me what was going on, and I let her get it all out, let her vent it out. Then I went back through her story and pointed out all the stuff that she was missing, all the positive things she was missing. What about this? You were doing this right. You're doing this right. And I'm not saying by the end of the call that she was doing jumping jacks, but you could tell that her body language was much better from the beginning of the call to the end of the call. And for me, that's a win. And I think that is the essence of my work is basically, there's so much more than you have. Mm-hmm. You just got to tap into it. Tap into your genius. We all have something great, some great talent that we have. And it's up to us to discover what that talent is. And when we discover what that talent is, we should share it with the world to see.
Well, and it changes the lens of how you're focusing on things too. I mean, you talk about your client and all this negativity and loss and anger. And I'm adding emotional words to the story. I don't know, but that we have all of these pieces, and we can really miss what that teaches us about our ability to have hard work or create connection. You know, and I think about that from your story. I mean, these are lessons hard learned from your own history about feeling like an outsider and, you know, feeling like you can't keep up versus starting to have this audacity to hope. Even something as small as a way to distract yourself with the baseball turns into a practice determination, and that practice determination turns into a skill, and that becomes something you can share with the world because of some of these so-called negative things happening in our lives. You know, what are you looking at? Are you looking at the loss, or are you looking at the opportunity? We have that in every single instance in our life.
Yeah, no question about it. You hit on something that I talk about all the time about the baseball goal that I had. The win was changing my energy. The win was having friendships that I didn't have before. The cherry on top was making the baseball team, but the win was that journey of going through this process of having more confidence in myself. And as a result of having more confidence in myself, I gained more friendships because of that, because I felt more worth to myself. And that was the win. The getting the goal was great, but the win was that part, the going through the journey.
And I think so often we do set our goals on like obtaining the thing, having the thing. And in science, research has shown that having a thing, you know, the satisfaction with that diminishes quickly over time versus experiences and relationships and lessons learned. And so I imagine that there's a lot in your coaching that talks about, you know, what to focus on along the way, that it's not every day just garnering towards that end of the checklist, but the steps that get you there.
Yeah, twofold on that. One is, I use this analogy all the time, is we need to embrace the journey more than anything else, the result. I use this analogy all the time. When you see a child and they're building Legos, the joy is in the process of building the Legos. You know, when they're done, they may be happy to tell their parents of what they built, and they might have that. But the most time they're having the most fun is when they're actually building the Legos, when they're in the presence of doing it. And that's with the coaching as well. Is I think that we feel this we're scared of failing, so we make these goals, like you said, that are real obtainable, but we don't stretch ourselves. We don't really go after it because we want to stay in that comfort zone. Right. Because I remember talking to one of my clients, and they're like, oh, I don't want to do this. And I go, what is the worst that's going to happen? Mm-hmm. I go, you think, I mean, he was painting this picture like he was going to be in this arena with this packed house of people he knew all of his life. And they were going to point at him and laugh at him that he failed. And I'm like, that is not reality. That's not going to happen. And if that is reality, then you need to find a different circle of friends, because they are not your friends.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Our worst case scenario is, it's funny, I never quite thought to put it this way until talking to you, but our worst case scenario is more audacious than some of the biggest dreams we could ever come up with. And I think if we started to look at it, it's more unlikely that the worst case scenario will happen than actually achieving your dreams. I mean, imagine what can come from that.
Yeah, no question about it. And I think another thing that I think a lot of people do is when they set these big time goals, they look at the top of the mountain and go, oh man, oh, I don't know how I'm going to get it out the top of the mountain, rather than just saying, you know, what's that next small step I can take? Ooh, that was, I like that. Okay. I'm getting momentum. Okay. What's the next small step? And slowly but surely, all of a sudden you're halfway up the mountain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That perfection is the enemy of progress is right there. I, I had a friend of mine gave me a piece of advice just recently. I'm writing a book. That's my mountain. And I want to have write the end on the last page and it's perfect and tiny and there's no grammatical errors to it. And I was stuck at a very emotional section that I just couldn't figure out how to write. And she said to me, like, well, you can't edit a blank page. And until you put something out, it was just great. I was like, oh, this can be crap. Because I can edit it. Yes. And we kind of need that permission of I can stumble because I can get stronger. You can't improve upon something that's not in motion. And how often do we want just to make that first thing perfect?
Yeah, no question about it. You know, that goes along with, you know, doing videos. Like a lot of people are scared to do videos. They need the right this, right? Just do it. Just do it. I mean, most people are looking at it. If the content is connecting to them, they'll enjoy it. If the content doesn't connect with them, they'll move on, but it's no big deal. I mean, nobody's really going to be looking at it going, oh, this is horrible. I can't believe this. They're not going to spend 10, you know, you think that, but I have to say this, you're not that important where they're going to spend 20 minutes looking at your video going, how bad it is. They're just not going to do it. They're just going to scroll on.
Yeah, they'll write you the 10-page of grievances of how you can improve. The worst-case scenario is more audacious than the actual outcome of going where you want to go. You inject hope into these conversations. When you work on changing our thoughts, I'm wondering if there's kind of some practical gifts you could give our listeners where they might start thinking about changing their thoughts and changing their outlook if they're kind of up against that wall themselves today.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely have that practical thing. I do it for myself. It's not just something I tell my clients to do, I do. And if I don't do it, I don't have as good of a day. Mm-hmm. So it's real simple. It's hard to do every day, but it's real simple. So when you wake up in the morning, before you start your routine, whatever that routine is for you, you can write it down or think about it. Think about things that are going well in your life right now. Family, friends, job, you're alive, whatever that thing is. And focus in on that. Because what will happen is you'll build on that, right? Mm-hmm. You might get something on your phone, free coffee. Oh, the day keeps getting better and better and better. That is the way to do it. And it sounds simple, but it's very, very hard, especially if you had a bad day the day before. You don't want to go there. I don't want to do that. You know, it's funny as I've started to really meditate a lot more than I used to. And I laugh at myself, you know, when I've had a bad day and I go, well, I should meditate. I'm like, no, I don't want to meditate. And that's the very time I need to meditate is when I feel that way. But, you know, your mind's like, no, I don't want to do it. And if you just do it, you feel so much better. And it's the same thing with that gratitude piece. It's very, very simple, but it's very, very hard, especially if things aren't going your way and they're not going to. That's newsflash. You're not going to wake up every day and feel like you want to take on the world. There's just days where you just don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. And just adding that little bit of gratitude piece, and not that it's going to be, you know, the end all be all, but it definitely will give you some perspective on having a better day.
Well, and it really brings into mind what you're saying in your analogy about when you buy the car and that's all you see. I'm a little obsessed with my Jeep, so it's been 15 years and I still see Wranglers everywhere. it's another story. When you need that gratitude is the moment where you don't want it. And that is your brain looking for that car, looking for that thing that's already familiar with. It's like, no, I don't want gratitude. I am busy focusing on crap. Yep, there's some, found some over there. Now stop with that. That's not what you have me focus on. It has to be a really determined interruption to habit. Yeah. If it wasn't, then you would have no job. If it didn't take determination, people wouldn't need a coach. They wouldn't need helpers to do it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. They could just do it themselves real easy.
I'm just going to be happy. Yeah. Changing that focus takes effort. Creating practices takes effort. And what anybody in the health and wellness industry is going to tell you is that it has to be every single day. It is so easy in and of itself, but the hard thing is the practice.
Yes, the consistency.
Mm-hmm. So what made you, I'm kind of rewinding now, I mean, we've got the whole experience of your coaching, but what made you want to become a coach? Where did you hit that tipping point of, I can help other people shift the way you shifted yourself?
Well, I've always loved the underdog story. I've always movies, books and stuff that's always been inside me. Right. And I got into, after I graduated college, I had no life experience. I knew what the heck I wanted to do. So I got into the mortgage industry and I was doing that for a long time and I was actually really good at it. And then 2008, 2009 hit and the economy just tanked it. And I would get a job in the mortgage industry and then that whole company would go belly up and I have to get another one. And I was really losing the luster of the industry altogether. And one of the last places I was at, they brought in this motivational speaker to, you know, pump us up, to get the numbers up. And the guy blew me away. And this is the reason why I got into it. Mm-hmm. I went to him and I said, what a great presentation. Thank you. And he was so gracious. He allowed me to pick his brain. He said he started as a life coach. And I'm like, what in the heck is that? Mm-hmm. And he explained that to me. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe that's what I want to do. So I got my coaching certificate and I started telling people in the mortgage industry, that's what I wanted to do. And they're like, okay, whatever, buddy, just go out and get loans. They're kind of humoring me. Mm-hmm. And then things got serious. I started getting my website and everything up. And the legal team at the place I was at said, what is this? And I was very transparent. And I said, I'm going to do this on the side. And they're like, this could be a conflict of interest. We'll get back to you. I'm like, that does not sound good. Yeah. And they came back to me with this 5-page report of what I couldn't say in this in that business. And I'm looking at this going, there's no way I'm going to make any traction in this business if I follow this to the T. So I spent a year paying down all my debts, doing everything I needed to do to take this leap of faith. And I quit my job a year later. And people are like, what in the heck are you doing? This life coaching thing's a pie in the sky nonsense. Mm-hmm. You're going to fall flat on your face and you're going to come back. And, you know, for a while I thought I was right. And like we talked about, I started embracing my vulnerability and things started to open up for me. So that's kind of how it all came to be.
Well, and another amazing story to really illustrate, you know, you had the goal at the top of the mountain, but you didn't just, you know, quit your job and expect to arrive there. I mean, the determination of doing the little next step of paying off all of your debts, of preparing yourself for this over the course of a year. You know, you really are someone who walks the walk. I mean, walks the talk, that this practice that you took on got you to where you are now.
Yeah, I really had to put away my ego because for the longest time, while I was building up my coaching practice, I had to make money, right? Mm-hmm. So I started Ubering and doing all this other stuff. And it was, I'll tell you what, I mean, there was times where I was delivering food to people I went to high school with. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, times must be tough for you. You know, and I had to have my ego in check on, you know, I didn't want to get into all I was doing. I'm like, I go, no, I'm, you know, things are great for me. I'm right where I want to be. And I walk away, they're like, what's this guy talking about?
Well, you know, and it goes to show that like we can't ever really know where a person is at in their journey, you know, where looking like everything is perfect. We can certainly have holes. We can have that social media appearance of, you know, this is the best version of my life when everything is falling apart behind the scenes. Or you can show up on someone's doorstep authentically. And, you know, what they think of you is it really becomes none of our business in the sense that you were right where you needed to be, even if it wasn't quote unquote picture perfect at the time. And we have to take ourselves in the moment we are in with the gratitude we have for what's in front of us.
Yeah. Well said. Now, that's so true. You have to look at it that way. Otherwise, if you start comparing yourself to somebody else, you're just going to go down a rabbit hole. And I tell people this all the time. It's impossible to compare yourself to somebody else. Why? It's because you don't know where their starting line is and you don't know their finishing line is. So why bother?
Yeah. Yeah. But you do know where yours is. And that's the race worth winning.
Yep.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for joining us today, sharing all this incredibly hard-won wisdom and the vulnerability to reach out and help other people and really lift them up. If you have inspired others today, as I'm sure you have, where can they find you? Where can they learn more about your work?
The easiest way to get in touch with me is I have developed a Facebook group called Rewrite Your Story. And it's a great community of people. We're all go in there And we're all about supporting each other with no judgment. We actually even have meetup groups the end of every Wednesday of every month. We have a meetup group for an hour and we just kind of allow the group to tell their story. And we're only there just to support each other. And it's a great community. So it's Rewrite Your Story Facebook group. Love to for you guys to come on board. You can get in touch with me there. I do have a website too, a call to action.coach, but the easiest way is probably through the Facebook group.
Wonderful. Well, definitely go check that out. Thank you, Paul, so much. What an incredible resource and community-driven focus. I just love that. And thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in today. I hope this was as inspiring a conversation to you as it was to me. We'll catch you next week with another episode of Healing Ground Movement. Be well.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard and got a little something out of it. Now remember, the information expressed in these interviews is for informational and not diagnostic or treatment purposes. However, I hope you find that having the right information and resources can go a long way to helping you on your healthcare journey. Ask the right questions and seek out professional help.